So when our son Sydney, who's now 17, was a little guy, he did not care about football. He'd sit in the games, the biggest NFL stadiums in the country, and read a book during the game. And he would ask me when it was over, "Who won, Mama?" He wouldn't even know. So I wasn't ever really thinking he was going to get much into football. And then we didn't want to let him play when he was too young because we didn't want him to tackle when he was too young. And really, he kind of discovered rugby just by this kind of serendipitous moment out on the beach when somebody was playing rugby on the beach and asked him if he wanted to join them. So he started playing rugby and really loved it. But about sixth or seventh grade, he also started to go over to football practice. And that was a way for him to spend some time with Dad. And that's when he started talking about wanting to play, probably before middle school. And we told him he was going to have to wait till seventh grade to play football because that's when we would let him start tackling. In the meantime, he just fell head over heels for rugby, but he was still saying he was going to try football. And then it just so happens that in seventh grade, when it was time for him to play football, that the whole coaching staff got fired at UNC. And Sydney came to us and said, "I don't really want to play football. I love rugby." And I remember thinking at the time, he picked the only sport worse than football to play. It's basically football without pads. That's what I thought about it when he started playing tackle rugby. And I have come to realize that I'm so grateful that things went the way he did. Number one, that he felt the freedom to tell us that he didn't want to play football since you weren't coaching at the time. And number two, that he found a sport like rugby, which isn't football without pads. It's a really different atmosphere, it's a really different culture, and it has really helped our son not necessarily learn how to be a quote unquote man, but to learn how to be a human being in a community where everybody can contribute. And that has been a real gift for our family.
Welcome to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century, from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. I'm Coach John Shoup.
And I'm Dr. Marcia Mountshoup.
Marcia is an author, theologian, and minister.
And John has coached at the highest levels of the game of football for 26 years.
We're Team Shoup, and we're glad you joined us to go deep into some of the most pressing issues of our time.
On Going Deep, we go beyond sound bites and highlight reels.
Hey, John.
Hey, Dan. How's it going?
It's going well. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Can you hear me?
Oh, I sure can.
Hey, Dan.
Hi, Marcia. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being willing to talk to us today.
Oh, thank you. I don't turn down the opportunity to talk rugby ever.
So whenever you hit record, I'll be ready to rock and roll.
We're
go
ready.
Go ahead. You hit it.
It's
oh, we're
go.
Good. All right. So this is Dan Payne, CEO of USA Rugby. Excited to be with you all today to speak about my favorite topic, which is rugby and the growth of rugby in America and why it's such a fast-growing game in the United States. I come from a background of I grew up wrestling and playing American football and baseball throughout my formative years, and then wrestled in college and found rugby actually right after I had graduated college, and have just fallen in love with it. Wish that I could have found it at the age I'm trying to get everybody to get attached to it now, which is 8 to 13 years old. If we can get more, more 8 to 13-year-olds playing the game, which is our goal, we'll be off to the races. So happy to be here, happy to speak with you guys, and really excited.
You know, the Sports and Fitness Industry Association has statistics on youth sports, and one of the statistics said that football was down 21% from the years 2008 to 2013. And get this, rugby was up 81% from 2008 to 2013. Why do you think rugby is such a rapidly growing sport?
Well, I think that, you know, there's obviously a multiple reasons and you know, potential explanations, but I, you know, the simplest answer is it's a great game to play. It's a lot of fun. Everybody, whether it's a young girl or a young boy, gets the chance to be a ball carrier and to play defense throughout the game. So, you know, I think that's one of the most intriguing aspects of it is in some sports you may not ever have a chance to even be a ball carrier or to have much of an offensive infusion or input. And in rugby, everybody has the potential to be a ball carrier. The players own the game, so there's a great level of empowerment and development from the player. And I think that's what you see a lot with the game growing, especially at the youth level and at the high school level, is parents really understand and appreciate the skill sets and the values that the game helps preach.
The more I learned about rugby, the more I started to enjoy it. And that's probably the same with any sport. The more you know about it, the more you understand, and the more you enjoy it. But I tell you, when I absolutely fell in love with rugby is when I traveled with my son, Sid, to Aurora, Colorado for an All-Star game. And he was playing on a team. And what I noticed was when our son, Sidney, took the field as a scrum half, I thought his self-esteem soared. His posture stood up. His demeanor became confident. He was very vocal on the field, and I thought to myself, what a game. In the world of college football and in the NFL, the quarterbacks are always looking to the sideline to get the play. The coaches are running the whole show. Well, in rugby, in the culture of rugby, it's a player's game, and the players run it all. And to watch my son go out there as a scrum half and call plays and just be an absolute leader, I saw his self-esteem soar, and that's when I really started to fall in love with the game.
As coaches, you do all your work up until that Saturday kickoff, and then once the whistle blows and there's the first kickoff of the game, it's for the most part, it's the player's game, and you can make a couple adjustments at halftime, but you know, it really is an independently run game that's owned by the players on the field, and that's something that's really special.
There's no multi-billion dollar coaches, and I can't even tell you who the coach is of some of the greatest teams in the world, but I can sure tell you who the players are.
Hello?
Taylor, can you hear me?
Yeah, is this John?
Yeah, hey, this is John Chu.
Hey, man, what's going on? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Long time no talk to you, man. It's been, what, a decade?
I'll tell you what, the last time I probably talked to you, you left my meeting room at the University of North Carolina, and
yep.
I walked down and told Butch Davis, I think he's coming to North Carolina. Don't worry, we got this
yep.
one wrapped up. Next thing I know,
yep.
son of a gun. So that was me that slashed your tires probably 2 days after that. That was me.
Yeah, that was, I saw a couple dents in my truck.
Right Taylor now. Gentry, Taylor was a football player. At NC State, I had actually recruited him unsuccessfully to come to the University of North Carolina, but he went to NC State and then became a professional rugby player.
And that and that's what I noticed in football too. There's a big difference, right? So you go from American football involving tackling and everything else. You go from American football where a coach tells you what to do on a play, right?
Yes.
And, okay, I need to tackle this guy or block this guy on a play. In rugby, you have to make a decision, right?
Amen.
So when you run down, you may make a tackle, okay? But that doesn't mean you may make that tackle and you're going to be out of breath. So you got to get up. You can't. In my first match, I tackled a guy. I got up, sprinted 40 meters across the field, tackled the other guy. He offloaded. I tried to tackle the other guy. I tried to do it all myself. Couldn't do that. You know, in football, you have that set play. You do it. You go after that one play. You go back to the huddle. You do the next play, so on and so forth. But in rugby, you have to learn how to make decisions. You have to learn how to see what's happening, see what's occurring in front of you, and then make a decision based off what's going on. So transitioning from football to rugby, you know, what I saw the entire time was, you know, again, going back to those fundamentals of I don't have someone telling me what to do. I have to make decisions on the fly. And that was the biggest thing when I got to South Africa.
Since the beginning of the game, the sport of rugby has been about self-preservation and safety. And obviously, there were no pads, and there wasn't a helmet, and there were no shin or knee pads or hip pads or anything. So, you know, as an American, a lot of the times people say, "Well, that's much more dangerous." When the exact opposite is the truth, because there's never been pads, the games and the rules of the games have always been about safety and how players tackle with their head to the side and shoulder in, and you have to wrap, and there's no blocking. I mean, there's all these different rules. You can't make a tackle where somebody's feet go above their waist. You have to bring them back to the grounds, you know, safely. Everything is about safety and has been from the beginning of the sport. So, you know, it's played, and the techniques that are taught to children at a young age are all about how to play the game in a physical manner, yet in a safe physical manner, with safety being paramount.
The rugby scrum is kind of like the American football line of scrimmage. But in a rugby scrum, what happens is the players bind and you try to win a stalemate. In an American football line of scrimmage, you never bind. And there's thousands, within a week, there's thousands of just micro collisions that you have with your opponent, just going from about a foot and a half away. Well, those micro collisions never occur in rugby because you bind and try to win stalemates in a scrum. Can you compare what it's like to be in a scrum to being on the line of scrimmage, because you're a big guy and you've been in both?
From a scrum standpoint, right, in rugby, when they set you and they bind you, you know, the ref, you know, is very cognizant of what's going on. He sees and understands, you know, a good bind from make sure they set right, make sure they bind, set, engage, you know, everything is done the right way. And if for any reason, you know, there's someone that is either pulling the wrong way or, you know, trying to do something outside of what, you know, the ref thinks that should be going on, he'll call, blow the whistle, and they have to reset. You know, from a football standpoint, right, you know, you talk about those collisions, you know, I lived those collisions. Those collisions are what ultimately took my career and, you know, halted it in a brief and sudden stop, you know, with concussions. And from a safety standpoint, you look at kind of the chaos that goes around, not just on the line of scrimmage, but just anywhere else in the field, you know, those collisions that happen over and over and over again. But from a safety issue, you know, offensive line, the cumulative amount of, you know, hits you take, whether you're an offensive tackle or a defensive tackle, and just going at it, rugby obviously has a little, you know, safer precautions back.
In American football, there's blocking, and in rugby, there's rucking. Now, American football has blocking where there's crack blocks, there's cut blocks, there's chop blocks. When you ruck, you are trying to protect your player, but you always have to meet head on. You can't come into a ruck sideways. You can't come at a person's body sideways. Your head never has to be on a swivel in the same way. Anytime that you meet up with someone to try to win a stalemate, you're meeting head on and never from the side. Unless you're holding the football, theoretically, you should never really get hit in rugby. And
right,
rucking is probably the closest thing to blocking. Can you compare what a ruck is like versus blocking?
A ruck is where you're ultimately trying to close the gate you know, over the ball. You're trying to protect the guy that just fell over the ball to make sure you guys maintain possession, right? So when you have someone ruck over you, and that's when I learned that this culture of rugby, when you have guys rucking over you constantly and trying, it feels like they're trying to protect you, you know. From that perspective, the culture is like, man, these are my boys. They're coming up. They're trying to ruck. They're exhausted, you know. They're exhausted. They've just sprinted, you know, X amount of meters, depending on how far you ran and where you set the ball. They're trying to catch up to you to seal off that ball to make sure no one can come in and take the ball from you, or the defense can take the ball and diff and whatever. But, you know, from that standpoint of rucking, you know, you're not blocking. You're essentially just protecting the ball from being taken from the defense. And then in blocking in football, you know, you're always looking for that crack block. You know, anybody can block. Anybody can hit. And then, you know, there are also, you mentioned crack blocks with the safety issues there. You know, I was infamously known on the field to, you know, crack block somebody. Or try always be looking for the head on a swivel, you know.
Yes.
I would love to see someone looking the other way, and then next thing you know, they're on their back. But in rugby, you know, you're honestly, you're just looking out for the guy next to you. And I think that goes back to, again, someone that just, you know, I'm not looking for that big hit. I'm looking for that, you know, how can I help my teammate? How can I help him get up the field? How can I inch the ball up the field? Because, again, it is a game of inches and it's a game of meters, to where, you know, football is a game of yards, but it's also kind of like me. You know, I got the first down. I got the, you know, I ran 60 yards. I had 500. I wish I could, you know, have stats of how many rushing yards that I had in rugby, you know, but you would never hear about that stuff.
Yes.
You'd only hear about, you know, the awards of, you know, who got man of the match, who got biggest hit of the match, or, you know, something like that. They didn't have stats. They didn't say, oh, you scored 20 tries. They went, great job. You know,
that
kind of goes back. And that, you know, and that, again, that's kind of veering off the topic of blocking, but that goes back to, you know, rucking. You have guys that are kind of coming in, you know, and could seal you and protect you, and it goes back to the team and culture versus football, which is, you know, about me, I.
Now, the question of gear versus no gear. Rugby doesn't wear helmets. And while it might sound counterintuitive, I think it's a lot safer if you don't have a helmet. If you don't have a helmet on...
I will agree with you 100%.
Well, say it out loud. If you don't have a helmet on, Taylor, you're not going to lead with your head, are you?
No. And that is where... So, think about, you know... The helmet is what made my life a living hell, excuse my life, in college.
Well, the helmet itself, and I come from a rabid football family, mm-hmm. but the helmet itself gives you a false sense of security.
Absolutely, it does.
I had a bucket of ice, John, that would sit on the side of my drills, where I would take off my helmet after inside drill and put my head in this bucket of ice to help my headache. And so I had to constantly, because think about a fullback, right? So if I'm doing a kickout block on DN, I have to put my head on the inside shoulder to kick him out. If I don't put my head on the inside, he has leverage. He can make the play. You know, he can, you know, tackle the running back, whatever. And so again, in rugby, you're more or less leading with your shoulder. You can't lead with your head. And the collisions that I had in rugby, and I had some pretty big ones, and I had some really big ones in college too. Just the impact on your head from a headache standpoint. I mean, I would make a single tackle in college for a single block, for a hit, or a crack block, or whatever, and I would feel a headache just about on every single hit. In rugby, I would once in a while hit heads and have a little head collision with somebody, and I would check for blood and make sure my head wasn't bleeding or cut open, which is pretty normal. But I would never have that ringing, continuous headache feeling that I had in football, and that was a major difference for me in playing rugby and playing football.
I can tell you without a doubt that if you don't have headgear on, you won't lead with your head. And I think that playing rugby without helmets and without pads, players have a greater realization that their bodies just aren't weapons. Now, occasionally you'll see a rugby player wearing a scrum cap, but that's not a helmet. Think of a scrum cap as more like a wrestler's headgear, and it's more to protect for maybe cauliflower ears in a ruck than really big bangs like a football helmet. And now let's talk about tackling. Rugby tackling's much different than American football tackling, and a lot of people in American football now are trying to teach a form of rugby tackling. In rugby tackling, you always tackle with your shoulder. Because you don't have a helmet on, you won't put your head in the mess. So you're always tackling with your shoulder, and in rugby, you have to wrap your arms. You're not allowed to just launch at somebody and try to nail them with your shoulder or lead with your head. You have to wrap with your arms. So every tackle in rugby kind of looks like a single or a double leg takedown. But here's where one of the things that's really important you have to understand. American football, a lot of those tackles are knockback tackles. In American football, you're trying to gain 10 yards and you have 4 downs to do it. Well, in rugby, you're trying to score a try and you have as many downs or what they call phases as you want. So yardage isn't that important. In football, it's important to knock somebody back so they don't get that 10 yards or even closer to it. If you make contact 5 yards away from the first down marker, you want to knock them back so they don't drag you for another 2. In rugby, drag down tackling is what it's all about. That extra yardage doesn't matter as much, and in fact, it's often important for the rugby ball carrier to go down quickly to start the next phase, whereas in American football, you're often trying to fight for yardage, fight for yardage. In rugby, you're not allowed to make contact above the shoulders. And in fact, if you do make contact above the shoulders, you're penalized. And like hockey, got to go to what they call the sin bin. And your team's going to play a man down for a while. And then maybe another nuanced but important point is in rugby, there's very few gang tackles. In American football, you're always trying to gang tackle and knock the defender and knock the ball carrier back. But in rugby, there's one thin line of defense, and everybody on the field is eligible to get the ball. So you have to cover everybody. And so most of, if not all, the tackles in rugby are really one-on-one tackles, and that pursuit or gang tackling that it happens in American football is completely different. It's really not a part of it. Every rugby team that my son has been a part of has had great morale. You know, in football, American football is the only sport in the entire world where the same people don't play offense as play defense. And that can make for sticky morale with on a team. But in rugby, everybody plays offense, everybody plays defense. Unlike football, where only 5 of 11 players are eligible to touch the ball, all 15 players in rugby can touch the ball, can score. Everybody's equal in rugby. Everybody gets the ball. Everyone runs. Everybody catches it. Everybody tackles. And that equality, I think, kind of stimulates morale and stimulates enthusiasm.
From a morale standpoint, you look at offensive and defense. I remember being at NC State and eating lunch or eating dinner during camp. And, you know, you're sitting with the offensive guys. You know, you watch film with the offensive guys. I was a fullback, right? So an offensive position. But you're watching film with the offensive guys. You're watching, you know, breakdowns of the offensive guys. You're not really associated with the defense at all. And so, yeah, you guys are teammates, but every single day you go out to practice, you're on 2 separate fields, offensive field and defensive field. You only come together when you got to battle each other. And even when you come together, I mean, there's still like some, you know, heat between you and the defense because you're out there to prove yourself every single day and why you got a scholarship. And, you know, I want to be the starter on, you know, in front of 65,000 people on Saturday. So you have kind of a chip on your shoulder to you know, own that defense and or own that offense, whatever side of the ball you're on in college. And so that, again, affects the morale in the locker room, affects the morale from a team standpoint. And, you know, I witnessed it firsthand when I transitioned to rugby because, you know, on those, let's say you're 5 meters out from the try and you get as close as you can, you set the ball, the scrum half gets in, you may hit pound that line and pound that defensive line over and over and over and over again, but you may not score at all, right? But you got to rely on the next guy to pick the ball up and try to get him to try. You got to rely on the next guy and the next guy and the next guy, and everybody's touching the ball. And that's what I truly learned, that rugby was a 100% team sport.
I'm starting to see when we lived in Indiana was some of those big guys that maybe in the spring don't play 7-on-7 with their football team were going out for rugby, and boy, they thought this was the greatest thing in the world because they get to touch the ball and score. It makes it kind of fun, doesn't it?
Yeah, I bet I would say there's probably not anybody that, as far as football players getting exposed to the game, I'd say the linemen are the ones that love rugby the best in the beginning, because they get to carry the ball and they get some attention. But you know, they also, if they haven't gotten their energy systems right, they realize they can't tap their helmet and get a sub pretty quickly as well.
If I could go back right now, and anybody listening to this, anybody you talk to in the future, John, if I could go back and play rugby while playing American football back in college or in high school, I would do it, because the things that I learned in rugby only would transition onto the football field and made me that much better of a player.
Amen to that.
You have a mutual respect for your opponent. You know, without your opponent, you don't get to share in the game that you love, and that's kind of how you craft your mind around the ethos of rugby, is that it's a shared competition. It's not, you don't hate your opponent. You don't have to breed this level of distaste. You go out and you get a chance to compete and perform to the best of your ability and how you've been prepared to perform. And your competitor, along with the ref or the official, are what allow you to do that. So, you know, it's definitely something that's very special about the game.
Mm-hmm. I love those words about the culture of the game. And another thing I really admire about the culture of rugby is at the level and the way that women play the game. In American football, the way that women participate, frankly, is on the sideline as cheerleaders. And in rugby,
not only do women play the sport, but women play the sport the same way the men do. The neat thing to me as a woman about rugby is that they're playing the exact same game.
Sure. Well, and with the same size ball as the men, and everything is exactly the same. And,
right.
You know, there's probably nothing that is more enjoyable for me in as many aspects of rugby that I get to enjoy than when you see a young girl, high school girl, or even college girl that's found the game, and when you can tell that they've been yearning for a contact sport, and all of a sudden they get a chance to express themselves and enjoy all the aspects of the game, you know, and just you see all the benefits, and there's a switch that flips that's like nothing else, and just the leadership and empowerment that comes on the women's side is phenomenal, and they're playing at an extremely high level. There's the NCAA has an emerging sport initiative behind women's rugby. You know, and there's over 20 NCAA schools right now that offer women's rugby as a varsity sport, and that's going to continue to grow because that's happened because that's occurring. Now you're seeing even more girls' high school programs and middle school and youth programs because there's that destination point now where women can go and play at elite universities throughout the country as an NCAA varsity sport. So that's really, really exciting.
What are the aspirations for rugby in terms of the collegiate game in this country? Do you aspire to be an NCAA sport? And if you do, let's talk.
Within our landscape and within our culture and within our country, as we know that you know, the normal pathway throughout scholastic sport and leading upwards, for the most part, ends or you know, is a large part based on the NCAA model.
Mm-hmm.
So from that perspective, and having the recognition and having it be a varsity sport with the attributes that come being such, on all these major campuses, that it is something that that I and others in the organization and hopefully most people across the country feel is a strong potential vehicle to help propel the sport forward. You know, the Olympic rings being added 2 years ago or this past summer, which we found out multiple years ago, was probably the strongest single most endorsing event that has occurred. Having an NCAA championship would be right up there within the American landscape on the women's side of things. But that being said, the like to your point, you know, there's a lot of elite and high performance universities on the men's side that are and even on the women's side that are doing it as best they can and playing at a very elite level without that endorsement. So, you know, it's a multi-pronged approach. I think if more women and young girls come to the game and are able to experience the game because we can push forward and develop an NCAA championship, I'm all for it and about it.
Right. I guess when it comes to men's rugby, I wonder what the kind of conflict of assignment would be because rugby's such an international sport. And a lot of players, including our son, you know, thinking about playing in Europe before he plays in college. And we just know from our experience coaching in football at the highest level, but that the NCAA really can complicate things for kids who've played in Europe and things like that. And I would think because of the international nature of rugby for especially the men's game, that would be a tough relationship for to not be complicated if you did ally with the NCAA.
Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of different aspects that come with, you know, the change in governance. You know, you lose autonomy, but you get quite a bit of support. I think everything can be managed to a best solution. You know, but you're right. There would be certain things that would be harder to navigate. But again, within our landscape in America, you know, there's not one size fits all. And if we can get more people playing and more awareness, and that comes with, you know, as an NCAA sport, it's something that we fully support.
In the college, what are the different levels that there are?
Sure. Well, there's the Division I-A that you spoke of. You know, there's actually three different levels on both genders, but there's also the NSCRO, which is the National Small College Rugby Association, which has actually had amazing growth as of late because as the game grows and you know, we're finding more high schoolers looking for opportunities to play in college. There's been a lot of even the smaller colleges that have looked for just, you know, ways to start clubs and start teams.
Sure.
And that's been a huge level of growth on both the women's and the men's side.
So there's three levels and then the small college level. Talk about post-college and how rugby is played in the United States, the divisions that there are, what opportunities there are to play post-college for men and women.
Yep. Well, there's actually two different levels, you know, with multiple divisions amongst each. We have what we call as performance rugby, which is elite rugby that would prepare you to potentially try to move into a pathway that could lead to a national team or representative team. And that's, you know, there's on the women's side, there's what's called the WPL, Women's Premier League. And on the men's side, there's a multitude of different clubs in different geographic regions that make up elite competitions or performance-based competitions. And then below that, our largest segment of rugby is played by our Division II and Division III clubs, which, you know, are just spread throughout the country. And these are just people that have either not gone to college or finished college and are just continuing to play. You can play the game well into your 40s, depending on how well you
Sure.
take care of your body. And there's a different division for you depending on what level you want to compete at. So it's a game you can play for a long, long time if you're interested, or you can continue to support as a ref or a coach. But it's definitely not a game. One of the great things about it is it's not over at the end of your college eligibility. There's a chance to continue to always find a club and always have a group of 40 or 50 friends that you can make almost instantaneously, regardless of where you are in the world or in our mm-hmm. country, if you walk into the
no
rugby
doubt.
Club after you're done.
That's so true.
Could you talk just a little bit for our listeners as well? Our son plays 15s primarily. Of course, he works out with a lot of sevens teams, but sevens is what was played in the Olympics. Could you talk a little bit about the difference between 15s and sevens, more than just one's played with 15, one's played with seven?
Sure. Sure. Well, I think the quickest version is they're both played on the same field, the same size field. So it's very, very similar to a soccer field. It's wider than a football field. And the key difference is sevens is played seven against seven on the same size field with 7 minute halves. So you can imagine there's a lot more space and there's a lot more action and very quick running or very quick scoring normally. 15s is more of what people would think of as the traditional form of rugby that most have seen on television, pre-Olympics anyways. Sevens is the Olympic code. And 15s is 15 against 15 players on the same size field with two 40-minute halves. So there's an 80-minute game that's continuous. Sevens, you'll play three to four games a day, and it's based on tournament-style play, where the first day you'll usually have pool play, and the second day you'll have your championship round play. But you can play multiple games in a day, and that's why it works so well in the Olympics, because you can complete the Olympic tournament in 2 days. 3 days, whereas in 15s it would take too many weeks to complete a tournament because of the recovery associated with each match.
Sure. And many young people playing rugby right now dream of playing for the Eagles someday, and the Eagles are the national team there in Colorado. Is there an equal commitment on the Eagles to the 15s and to the 7s internationally?
Yeah, well, there's, obviously we call all of our national teams are known as, like, our sevens team is the USA Eagles, our 15s team is the USA Eagles. There's with the Olympics attached to sevens, and the World Cup attached to 15s, we have to make sure that we provide competitive teams in both. And again, we want to, be able to, it's a little bit different energy system and body type that can excel at sevens than at 15s. So we have to provide those opportunities, across the board for athletes to play. So there is an equal emphasis. If anything, in our country, it may be a little bit different because sevens is in the Olympics and we do really, really well on the international stage. It's almost coming to the forefront and growing awareness of the game and visibility for the game, whereas 15s provides more opportunities for participation and players to play. Mm-hmm. There's a position for every body type in 15s, whereas 7s is a little bit more unique.
Sure.
As you look at the landscape of what's happened in the last, 20 years with rugby and what you hope will happen in the next 20, What is a big challenge that you see, and then what is your kind of dream? What would you see as what you hope to see in the next 20 years?
Sure. Well, I think it's interesting. So USA Rugby was founded in 1975, and in the year 2000, at the 25-year anniversary, they celebrated the fact that we crossed over 40,000 members, registered members. Today, at the end of 2017, we'll celebrate being probably just north of 130,000 members. Mm. So you can see that the trajectory and the growth over the first 25 years to the last 15 to 17 years has really started to take off. I think, with the growth on the girls and women's side of the game, along with the growth and the emphasis on pushing the game to the 8 to 13-year-olds in both boys and girls, there's a lot of opportunity. Our average age of entry is still 18 or 19 when most people get exposed to the game. We've got to get that down, and we've got to drive the average age lower and let people and young girls and young boys choose at 12 or 13, which, you know, let rugby be in the equation when they want to start thinking about specializing. Personally, I think kids should be playing multiple sports for longer. But, you know, we've got to at least be in that discussion for those kids that want to specialize, that if they've been exposed to the sport from the age of 8 to 13, that when they start to narrow down which one or two sports they want to stay with, they've been at least been exposed to the game of rugby, and we're in the conversation, because that will be then really where we continue to turn the tide on an international level. We have a long way to go to continue to grow the game at the youth level, and that's exciting because that's, we know that that's where the true upside is. You know, I think when we continue to do that and grow out our youth leagues and our community-based leagues, you'll see a increase in not just greater athleticism, but greater fan participation, because all of those young girls and young boys will grow up, even if they don't continue to play, they're going to be fans of the game.
You
Their
bet.
Parents will be fans of the game. So yes. that's really what I'm excited about.
Well,
that's what's happened to us, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are living proof of
that's
this.
Right.
I didn't even mean to do that.
We're your poster boy.
So you're you're sort of like a professor of American football, and it's been interesting as we've watched Sydney play to learn about all these differences, because I picked up on a difference from the very beginning just in the culture of the game, that it seemed to kind of cultivate a different formation in the players and a different sense of sportsmanship and a different sense of camaraderie and connection and solidarity, even around the world. We've traveled around the world, and rugby is a community. It's helped me to learn from the kind of technical point where that is fomented. It's in the way the game is played. It's being an international sport as well. It's not so rigorously American. It's a sport where there's a degree of equity. It's not so hierarchical. The other thing that's interesting to me is just the whole dynamic of masculinity in rugby. There are openly gay players. In fact, there are players who are not just openly gay, but really champions of, same gender marriage and things like that in many different cultures where that would not be a popular thing to do. So the culture that grows up from that kind of way of playing that you just described, that is so different than football, also cultivates an atmosphere of equity in a lot of ways that we could not say that about football. It's very hierarchical. It's very much about domination and top-down kind of stuff. And there's a more kind of flat organizational model in rugby that is interesting to me.
Taylor Gentry. Man, it's great talking to you. I'll send my info, and I can't thank you enough, okay?
Yeah, John, no problem. And thanks for reaching out, and I appreciate you hitting me up. And if you need anything in the meantime, let me know.
Yeah, let's stay in touch. Thanks, man.
All right, John. Thanks, brother.
Bye.
Bye.
You know, it is such a great game, and it's something that you've obviously been bitten by the bug of the great game that we all, I call it an irrational passion. Once it
yeah.
gets you can't justify it until others see it and become a part of it. But it's a great game. I have to confess that my wife and I went on our honeymoon to New Zealand, and one day we
just coincidentally.
Yeah, it just happened to work out that way. And she's such a great sport. She spent 2.5 hours in the car driving across just because I wanted to go see one of their famous stadiums that I'd watched on TV for years and years. She did it, and we took a picture, and we got there and walked around a bit, and then that was it.
I can relate.
That
I
is
understand.
Awesome.
I understand.
The CEO of USA Rugby. Yeah. Hey, honey, for our honeymoon, we're going to New Zealand. That's classic.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking to us, Dan. We appreciate it.
It's starting to really resonate with a lot of people here in America, and it's exciting. So thank you for covering it.
Absolutely, Dan. Take good care.
You bet.
All right.
You've been listening to Going Deep, Sports in the 21st Century from the studios of Blue Ridge Public Radio, NPR for Western North Carolina. Tell us what you think of the show by emailing us at goingdeep@bpr.org. And make sure you like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @ShoopsGoingDeep.